This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Lily Allen. Wow. Pop star, celebrity, meltdown, mother, wife, girlfriend, daughter. She's so many things. And in her book, My Thoughts Exactly, she goes in on the life that she has had. Now, before you judge her, before you just think about her on Twitter, before you think just about the tabloid headlines, give a listen to this. This is half an hour of your time in the company of Lily Allen, a really interesting individual. But before we got into all of that, the history, we talked a little bit about the future, because I interviewed her on the very day she was about to go to see whether she would win the Mercury Music Prize. And I started by asking her how she felt.
I'm feeling really anxious, I'll be honest. I'm really scared about the performance, just because, you know, I'm in a room full of really, really talented people that are all watching. And do you know what? I really want to win.
Because you're no stranger to winning awards, are you? You've been nominated for Grammys, you've won Brit. I mean, Enemy Awards,
I have my Ivan
GQ
Avellos.
Female of the Year.
Yes.
You know, you've been all around the awards circuit, but this one, does this one mean more to you?
I think it would. I mean, it's amazing already to have been nominated, and I really did not expect it. In fact, I didn't even know that it had been submitted for consideration. So when I got the news that I was, shortlisted, I was really, really shocked. And very, very happy. It's no secret, I haven't really felt very supported by my record label with this album, which is weird because it's been very, very well received critically, you know, and very well reviewed. And, there's been almost, the record label's job is to get you on TV and on radio. And they haven't done it, you know. I haven't done one TV performance and sung anything from this album. In fact, I did one, which was Jules Holland, and that was only because I called him up and begged him to have me on. So, without this book and without this prize, this album would have come and gone without anyone noticing it. And I do sense of a bit of betrayal by them. And so to win this would just be massive, big middle finger.
Well, I think, I mean, your relationship with your record company is strained, should we say?
I don't know if it is that strange, actually. Prince had similar problems,
Absolutely.
Lots of people don't like their record companies very
much. No, indeed. Have you thought about drawing something on your face?
Maybe tonight.
change your name to a symbol. I wonder what that symbol would be.
Yeah, I don't know. Sad face. No, that, that,
but that, you know, to pour so much as you did into No Shame and then feel as though that you haven't been supported in this way, but then also be at the Mercury's tonight, what a strange emotional ride that is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, these two things, the book and the Mercury Prize, are two things that the record company have no control over, you know? They're two things that have happened independently of them. And, I'm just very happy about both of them, to be honest.
Have you perfected a I'm really happy for you face, as well as a
I would be elated if I was to win, but I wouldn't feel bitter if I didn't.
You wouldn't do a Kanye. You're
no
definitely
way.
Not going to do a Kanye.
I'm not going to get up in front of Florence and be like, I'm going to let you finish.
Please do.
No, but I think that, you know, there are some really, really, really worthy people that are nominated. You know, Wolf Alice, I think, could walk away with it. I think Nadine Shah's album is fantastic, and there's a real shortage of people considering the political climate talking about the subject matters that she talks about. True. So I think that that's really, really important, and she really deserves to win it as much as anybody. And Florence, I think that her lyrics have come along on this album. I've enjoyed, you know, more than her previous albums, you know, lyrically. The Arctic Monkeys, I really like all that. Although I don't know if they're coming tonight. Sons of Kemet.
They definitely won't win if they're not coming.
I've got quite into that album, and Everything. Yeah, I mean, everyone deserves to win, actually.
Yeah.
I hope I do.
Yeah, for real. But a day doing kind of promo around the book and how draining that is. What would be your kind of ideal day in the run up to doing something as nerve wracking as performing on stage at the Mercury's and then having to sit there and wait and find out if you're going to win?
I don't know. I mean, I recorded Jonathan Ross last night because I'm going to be on that this weekend. I think it's on. Is that what day is it? Jonathan Ross on Fridays or Saturdays? I can't remember.
That's really bad.
Quite late, actually. So I had a bit of a late night and I got up super early this morning to start doing promo. So it's not ideal when you're, you know, really wanting to give your best vocal performance to be talking to people at length all day in the run-up. So ideally, I'd probably like to stay in bed, eat a massive fry-up, line my stomach for all the booze that I'm about to consume, and do a bit of vocal warm-ups and, yeah, that would be ideal. Hasn't worked out that way.
And I will carry on this torture by asking you some more questions, Lily, for the next 20 minutes or so. My thoughts exactly. So who approached who? Did someone approach you and say, look, you need to write about your life, or did you feel I need to put this out there?
Have you read it?
Yes, I've read bits of it.
Okay, so...
And it seems so utterly personal.
It is utterly
naked.
It is utterly personal. You know. But to be, you know, if I'm being frank and brutally honest, which I tend to be, you know, I felt a couple of years ago like the walls closing in on me a little bit, in terms of my record company and also in terms of the tabloid press and their, you know, coverage of me as a person, and every time I wanted to speak up about things that I thought mattered, whether it was, you know, visiting the refugees in Calais, or you know, talking about the stalking stuff that happened to me, and even talking about you know, hacking and Leveson and things like that. And I feel like I've become sort of public enemy number one for them in lots of ways. Probably public enemy number three or four after Jeremy Corbyn and Sadiq Khan. But
you're vying with Gary Lineker at the moment.
Oh yeah, and Gary obviously. Yeah. The way to fight these powers is with lawyers, and I don't have the money to do that, you know, anymore, contrary to popular belief. And so I felt like I have a right to be here, you know. I write really good songs and I share my experiences in a truthful way, and it helps a lot of people, and I try to do good, and I try to get myself, you know, use my position of privilege to help other people and to bring things to the, you know, forefront and of conversation, and to start those conversations, and the people, you know, with all the money and the power really don't like that, and I feel like they are trying to not necessarily silence me, but discredit me, maybe.
Right, okay, and undermine what
and
you
undermine
have to say.
Me. And yeah. So I felt like, you know, I had somebody came to me with an idea of doing a book, and I was like, actually, well, you know what? Maybe this would be a really good way of putting that out there. And I think sometimes, you know, I do talk about these things, you know, politics or society or, you know, women's issues or whatever it is, I get a lot of pushback, and I think that people, you know, the pushback is usually like let's turn her into a cartoon, and sometimes I think the human me gets lost a little bit, I felt like I wanted to write about the human me.
I was reminded of a phrase that says, you know, if privilege is your normal, then equality feels like oppression.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were describing how largely men treat you, somehow they feel like they're being undermined by your existence.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I was just reading something on Twitter for a journalist was talking about how he thought that if I was to win the Mercury later on today, it would only be because of this interview that I did in The Guardian on the weekend, and he was like, you know, if a man had come out and talked about those things, he'd be judged in a totally different way. The thing is that men do come out and talk about, you know, the rock and roll lifestyle. It's just that their parenthood or parenting has never bought into it, you know?
Yeah.
That they're not, you don't follow up you know, a news article about Chris Martin or Liam Gallagher or Noel Gallagher, and it's never Noel Gallagher, father of two, you know, or Liam Gallagher, father of two. It's always women that get that. We're judged in a completely different way.
The decision that you make to commit, and you're on the edge of the abyss, as it were, and by commit I mean to being completely open about everything in your life.
Mm.
And this book is, I feel like I know Lily Allen much closer than I ever thought I did,
mm-hmm.
knowing her as a public persona. How difficult were those, especially those conversations, you know, about your parents and their parenting?
It's not easy, but, you know, I wouldn't have written them if I didn't think that it was important, you know.
Of course.
In terms of the story. And
why was it important for people to understand that, those elements of your childhood?
Because, you know, our childhood is what makes us into who we are now. So, you know, people have got a very clear idea of who they think I am now, but they don't necessarily know the
well,
beginning
bits. Well, they make assumptions, don't they?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, there people will probably say, you know, you have gone too far and you've made some, you know, said some really shocking things in this book. But, you know, I know there are some important things that I cover in this book. And if I hadn't written about the sort of shocking and more salacious things to go alongside them, the newspapers would have found out about those stories and used them against me to discredit the important things in this book. So I thought, I'll just do it all.
you know that thing where people would have said this to you 1,000 times, Lily, and someone like Seb would have said it to you, sure, 1,000 times, where it's like, stop focusing on the 3 or 4 negative things, or maybe 300 or 400 negative things, and the 10,000 really good things and the love that you get.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think it's so difficult for people in the positions such as yours? And I'm the same. I only see that numpty that's said something horrible about I'm only here because I'm brown.
Mm.
You know, why is it that you have to focus on those things?
Well, for a start, you know, at the beginning of my career, people always used to say that thing of, you know, you should never read your own press. But recently, and well, actually ever since I've sort of, you know, the MySpace days and stuff, as artists, we need to run our social media accounts. And so it's very, very difficult to avoid reading your own press. And also people's responses, you know, and you say, you know, why concentrate on the negatives when there's so many positives? I'm not lying when I tell you that 95% of my mentions on my Twitter are from far-right, you know, trolls and bullies. It's a really difficult place to exist and to be positive in. It's very hard to actually go through all of those things to find the 5% of positive ones. It's really hard.
But then, of course, there's, I guess it's not the messages, it's the streams that you get, it's the accolades like being nominated for the Mercury Music Prize, it's the people that come out to all different parts of the world, whether it be in Sydney or whether it be in Berlin or whether it be in the States, to come and see you, to pay money.
Mm.
Not someone, because they're usually always anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
They always have an avatar. I've never seen a face of any one of these numpties. Right?
True, yeah.
Right? But you see the eyes of people that come and sing along every word back at you, front 100 rows.
Yeah. And those moments are incredible, you know. They are amazing, and I love performing more than anything. And I want to be able to do that for as long as I possibly can, but there are forces at work that are trying to stop me from doing that. So yeah, that's why I've written this book.
Yeah, of course. But by forces of work, forces at work.
Sorry.
That's all right. You're allowed to cough.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe your trolls probably won't think you're allowed to cough. Oh, look, there she is, that privileged woman coughing again on radio. She can get away with anything she does, that Lily Allen.
Can't she afford strepsils?
Our dad's Keith Allen, for crying out loud. you're right. It must seem really odd when nothing you can do or say can be put out there without someone being really vile about you and also your children.
Yeah. And also, but the thing is that it would be fine if somebody was like, you know what, Lily, let me take all this off of this load off of you. I'll run your Twitter and your Instagram and we'll get someone to follow you around and take nice pictures and put them up, but they don't, you know, you have to do it yourself. So therefore you have to sit in the negative stuff as in order to be active in those places. And if you're not active in those places, then, well, you can, you know, wave goodbye to any kind of, you know, engagement, or which is what triggers streams like you talk about, or, you know, anything. That's what people look at, isn't it, is your numbers.
How do you cleanse yourself from this?
Writing a book.
Do you feel cleansed by the process of
I do. I'm really,
book?
I like, today I feel a bit anxious and I feel a bit teary. But, you know, I know that this time next week I'm going to feel like, you know, I've put this period of my life to rest now and I can move on with the next bit.
Do you care if any of those trolls read the book? Because of course,
I don't think they will.
That's the point.
They haven't got the time. They're too busy trolling.
Well, yeah, and they're not. They're probably not big on long reads.
No,
300 odd pages is probably a little bit too much for most of them. But then, otherwise, it's, I guess, preaching to the converted, as it were.
What the book?
Yeah, because people who are already fans of you.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. There are lots of people actually already on my Twitter saying, you know, I've heard Lily on so-and-so's radio show. I found that really interesting. I'll definitely buy the book. So I do think that it is it's opening up to a slightly different audience.
There's so many stages of your life that you have been so vulnerable. And when needing people to be there for you, they've kind of not been there. I was particularly shocked by, you know, how long the stalker was allowed to, how that was allowed to develop and escalate, you know, to be given a panic alarm and then have it taken back by the police.
Yeah, that was pretty insane. I don't really know how much I can talk about that stuff, to be honest, without sort of legal implications.
Right,
but yeah,
okay.
I think the police were pretty useless at helping me deal with that situation. And I think that they're pretty useless at helping women in similar situations across the board, actually. You know, that's what I hear back from people, is that they're not very good at dealing with that at all. And it is a complicated issue. Don't get me wrong, it's not an easy one to deal with. But
and there are thousands of women every year who are going through this.
Oh, so many.
And men as well.
And actually, I think you'd be really shocked. I haven't got the figures to hand, but the amount of women that are murdered, a huge percentage of them have reported their murderers to the police as being stalkers before they were killed. So, yeah.
And thankfully, this guy is not in your life anymore.
No.
But of course, again, about being your honest self, your true self in the book, and the fact that you were assaulted by someone in the music industry. You wanted to name this person, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And you were told not to.
I wasn't told not to. I mean,
I
wrote his name in the book, and I gave the book to my publishers, and when the edit came back, it said we can't name him for legal reasons.
Have you called him out about it, face to face?
Yeah.
What was his reaction?
He said, please don't say anything, otherwise it will break my missus's heart. You know, it will ruin her. He immediately made me feel like I was responsible for looking after her feelings, you know. And you know, I wasn't in a very good place at the time anyway, and it was I took that on board. You know, I felt guilty. Weirdly, I felt bad if his mum found out, who I'd never met. You know, I'd never met this person's mum, but for some reason I felt like, gosh, it would be awful for her to find out that her son behaves in this way. It would be heartbreaking. So yeah.
Do you think you will ever name him, or do you think that's it?
I don't know if I'm allowed to. You know, I'm so unclear with how these things work legally, and nobody ever can really give you a sort of straight answer. And I think that's one of the big problems. You know, but everybody knows who it is in the music industry, and everybody in my record company knows who it is, because they've, you know, been sent emails from all of the newspapers saying, we know who it is, can we have a confirmation? And, you know, everyone's responded, no comment. And so they all know, and they all work with him still.
In terms of the music industry itself and your record deal, you know, you're still on that 5-album deal. Is that right?
10 more songs. 45 minutes.
I feel a Christmas album coming out from Lily Allen. I feel a 1920s
I think I might just sing the chapters of my book.
My thoughts exactly.
Bye, Lily Allen.
Right, okay, I'm going to text Giggs and say, Giggs, go and do the first track on the album with... work with her again. It's amazing that how open you are to new forms of music and how excited you are by new forms of music. I know Dan and I, of course, are depressed after what our football team did this week.
Oh, yeah.
So, but you are very open to all kinds of music. You're a constant listener of music. Is this something that you think? Elton John was on the show a little while ago, and he at his age is still trawling through music. Are you still looking to be excited by new music all the time?
Yeah, I mean, I love
rather
new
than
music.
Just
you know,
going
that's
to
one of the things that I really miss about MySpace. Actually, is the top eight. You know, and being able to rep the people that you're. Supporting. I remember I used to have like Ellie Goulding and Adele and Florence, you know, before any of those people were big, they were all in my top eight. I love music. I want to be working in music forever. I'm actually sort of writing two different musicals at the moment for the stage, which I can't talk about what they are. But
that's amazing.
But I'm really enjoying that as a format because...
Are you doing Grime, the musical?
It's funny you should say that. Then it's not. I'm not. But there has been a conversation about doing that. What I would really like to do is try and reinvent that format for a younger audience, you know, make it less naff and make it something that people want to go and do, because with so much of the media that we consume is through our phones, it'd be nice if people got out a bit more.
Look, you've got such a big day ahead of you. You've got this amazing book out, My Thoughts Exactly, which, you know, it really kind of opens you up. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a regret in there. You mentioned at the beginning going to Calais and then breaking down and apologising on behalf of, you know, my country, and seeing that you regretted saying that. And I was kind of wondering why you kind of regretted saying that and saying that it was a clumsy thing to say. Because actually, you know, you're allowed to. There's plenty of people on both sides of the debate who feel that they speak for the whole country all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was just, you know, because I felt like, you know, I said that, you know, want to apologise on behalf of my country, but... lots of people don't feel that way. So I didn't really have a right to say it. It's how I feel, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't think I said anything wrong. I just think that the wording was... I think it probably should have been like, you know, I would like to apologise for the actions of the country in which I was born.
Do you ever think of leaving this country?
Yeah, all the time. But it's difficult now because, you know... My ex-husband and my and kids, you know, I don't want to take them. We share custody. We do, you know, a week each, you know, Friday to Friday. So, you know, I love co-parenting with him. You know, I wouldn't want to take them away from him. But you know, I do find it hard here. I actually, you know, I get a lot more support everywhere else in the world. You know, I've just sold out a massive tour in Australia, which is really great. I play much bigger venues in America than I do here. You know, it would make sense for me to leave. But I'm stuck here, and after Brexit, it's going to be even worse. We're not going to be able to get out at all.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine. Don't
worry. I don't know.
You'll be fine. People will still be able to travel. They're not going to stop planes, I don't think, after Brexit. I mean,
Who knows? But
have you ever had the conversation with your ex about?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably one of the reasons that things sort of fell apart between us. You know, is that I've felt really, really strongly that I wanted to move, and he felt really, really strongly that he didn't want to, and I felt that he wasn't really listening to my needs. You know. At that time, You know, but fair play to him. You know, he has built up a company for the past 17, 18 years. He works in construction, and it would have been really, really difficult for him to have up sticks and to have started that all over again. So he's totally within his rights to have made that decision. But it didn't make it made life really, really hard for me. You know, I didn't enjoy being here for a long time. You know, it's not just people writing things. It was physically oppressive. You know, I've had 30 photographers standing outside my house every day for years. It was debilitating in lots of ways. You know, it made me quite agoraphobic, and you know, and then that combined with the stalker thing happening, I just wanted to get out. But you know, I'm in a much better place now.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's cheer this up. Everything's going to be fine.
Nominated for a Mercury, for crying out loud. Sold out tour in Australia.
Yay.
You know, that is no joke. That is no joke at all. And an album that, as you said at the beginning of this interview, you feel hasn't been supported. You know, an industry, people, your peers have listened to it and gone, my gosh, this is an amazing body of work. And when you think about how many albums are released, how many that people have to listen to, that must make you feel immense.
It makes me feel really just beyond happy and overwhelmed, and like, you know, I'm good at doing my job.
You are good at doing your job. You are good. And also, I mean, do you, when in the songwriting process, how important is negative energy in feeding what you want to do and what you want to say? How important is happiness? How important is sadness?
I don't know. I think that my sadness really helped with this album. But, you know, actually with my first record, with, you know, All Right Still, it was pretty carefree and, you know, liberating in lots of ways. You know, it was I was feeling very confident in that period of my life. And, you know, I was in a... In fact, I was with Seb. I was in a great relationship, and
he's a good lad,
you know, I was partying every week and going to yo-yos, and you know, yeah. and that was reflected in the music. So I think it's depends on. I mean, the thing is, I never set out to write a sad album. I just happened to be sad, and I was writing an album, so it came out as a bit of a sad album. But you know, when things are a bit better, I just write about how I'm feeling. So if I'm feeling good, the songs will be feel good, and if I'm feeling bad, they'll be sad face.
Is the expectation that the sadness goes away through creating the music?
Yeah, and I definitely feel that with this album and with the book as well, is that a lot of it, you know, when I broke up with Sam, my ex-husband, you know, I had really, like, attached myself to him and his life and his friends and his social, you know, sort of structure, I guess. And when that deteriorated, I did feel incredibly isolated and alone. And also because my career wasn't in a great place, you know, all of the sort of, like, faux friends and the hangers-on also weren't around. So I just found myself incredibly lonely and incredibly isolated, and didn't really have anyone to talk to, except for Seb, who's heard it all too many times. And so Seb just has this glazed look now. It's like just not shocked by anything anymore.
Oh, does he?
Writing these two things, the book and the album, has it's helped me. They've been my mates, you know. Like this book and the album have been my best friends for the past 2 or 3 years, and they're the people that I've told everything to, and now it's out there.
It is out there. Have your folks read it?
Yes. Well, my mum has. I don't know if my dad has.
Feedback from your mum?
She says, "You know, where's your truth, darling?"
Right. Okay.
Okay. You pathological liar. No, she is, you know, she's hurt by some of it because it's not, I don't think it slags her off at all, you know. It's just quite matter of fact about the fact that she wasn't really there. But, you know, my mum came from a very working class family in Portsmouth. And, you know, then she came to London, managed to put herself through university, God knows how, with one small child, and then had me when she was 23, and then Alfie, my brother, when she was 24, and then was divorced by the time she was 25, 26. And she's gone on to have this amazing career as a film producer and be a woman, you know, and a young woman at that. And so that doesn't happen without making sacrifices along the way. And, you know, as small children, we suffered the brunt of that. But we also gained a lot from it, you know. Like, she did it for us, to put a roof over our heads and to put food on our tables. And she did that, and she did it brilliantly. But that doesn't mean that we didn't miss her when we were little, you know. So I think it's just, it was hard for her to read, because she feel, you know, as a mother, you do feel like you've let your kids down if they've got something to complain about. But it's not really about complaining. It's just being... just being open about it, you know. And it's sad that she has to feel that shame and guilt, because it's not written with the intention of her making her feel like that. But as women, we do feel ashamed and guilty because people tell us that our role is to stay at home and look after our kids. So you do internalize that. So it's hard, but she's a grown up, and so am I, and we're incredibly close. She's, you know, Nanny Ali, she is to my daughters, and we see her pretty much every day. She pops over, and, you know, the kids spend lots of time with her. So do I. And, yeah, everything's fine.
Did you worry about the kind of mother you would be based on your own experiences?
Yeah, and I think that when I was on tour doing the Jesus thing, at the end of 2014 and beginning of 2015, I could really feel that. You know, I could feel the circle happening. And that triggered all sorts of, like, negative things for me, you know, panic. And I just sort of turned, I didn't know what to do. And, you know, I had sold tickets for the next 13 months. So I knew that there was no stopping it. You know, it was something that I was committed to doing, and spending long periods of time away from my kids, which is exactly what I did not want for them. But, you know, Sam and I had decided that it was more stable for them to be at home with him than it would be for them to be on the road with me. And it was a really, really, you know, rude awakening for me, that. And I did what I, you know, I dealt with it the only way that I knew how, which was drugs, alcohol and sex. that's what happened. But, you know, this time around, I've sort of figured it out, you know, and I've figured out how to schedule things so that I don't end up in that situation. And, you know, making sure that they're coming out to meet me in America when they're half term with my mom, and, you know, boundaries, saying no to things. You know, it's hard to say no to things in this industry, you know, when opportunities are presented to you. And, but, you know, I have to prioritise.
And look, thank you so much for spending this time with us on a day when you'd rather be eating a fry up in bed. And thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me today.
Lily Allen, her book My Thoughts Exactly is out now. And if you want to check out the album that came out in the summer, that's called No Shame.
BBC Radio 5 Live.